Welcome, everyone, to DEI After 5, the show that focuses on topics across diversity, equity, and inclusion with some of the brightest minds in the industry. Here's your hostess, inclusive culture curator and coach, Sasha Thompson. Hey, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of DEI After 5. Now, a few weeks ago, we were talking about, or, you know, previous episodes, and I'll link it for sure back to this. We were talking about, you know, there's this anti-DEI movement that's going on. All of these attacks are happening, and there just doesn't seem to be like a great response that is taking place, right? It's just so many just missing pieces in the conversations that are happening right now. And so I wanted to take this time to speak to someone who is a communication specialist, right, in the DEI space. And so my guest today is Shirley Knowles. We are going to unpack what is really happening, what needs to happen, and probably, you know, think about some things that we all can do to have a collective story as we're talking about the future of DEI. So Shirley, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Sasha. I'm really excited to be here.
Wonderful. So for those who may not know you, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into this work?
Oh, the question, tell me about yourself. So I like to say that I have been living this work most of my life. Being involved in issues that focus on equity and inclusion and diversity, and being able to define what those words mean, what these concepts mean, have been important to me. I have taught cultural diversity classes. I have worked in a variety of school settings, attended great schools myself. But I have always had an interest in people and understanding experiences, viewpoints, perspectives, and really just not saying my way or my view is the right way, but more so understanding other people and their views and the lenses that they may look through. Mm-hmm. Because once I establish that type of understanding, it helps me to communicate with them in a way that makes sense, instead of me trying to force ideas or concepts on them that they don't really connect with and would only push them further away from a conversation with me. So that's who I am at my core, but professionally, I lead inclusion and diversity as the chief IND officer at a large software company, global software company, Progress. And we have employees all over the globe. And so, again, it goes back to understanding life experiences and perspectives. Mm-hmm. And I have to do that with my job. It is an honor for me to connect with people and learn about their culture. But if I did not have that understanding, or at least the desire to understand as part of my own foundation, I think it would be very challenging to do my job.
Absolutely. You know, I tell everyone that, you know, I was a sociology major in college. And if I had not, I'll say it this way, I think everyone should take a sociology class, right? Because of exactly what you said, right? It's understanding other people's perspectives, seeing what influences, historical influences, have impact who they are and how it shapes how they show up today.
Yes.
And, you know, as someone who had a background in marketing, right, I'm understanding it's like, who's your audience? What is the story that you're telling them? And, you know, how do you get them to care about what you're saying to them? So I appreciate, you know, everything that you're saying, because it is so critical, especially in the work that we do. You know, so I started at the top, you know, talking about there's this anti-DEI sentiment that is permeating the news cycle, high level and not, right? There's some that are just really going under the radar and people aren't necessarily seeing or understanding the greater impacts of it. And, you know, when you and I were talking before, it was really around like DEI does need a comms plan. There needs to be some type of conversation that's happening. You know, I've had several conversations about that. What do you think is truly missing in the other side of this anti-DEI conversation?
First of all, I think it's important to note that a topic such as diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, fairness, all of the words that we may use, this stuff can get very subjective. So the way that I define what inclusivity looks like or what an inclusive work culture looks like may differ from you, Sasha, and what you see or how you would define it may be different from the next person. What I think is really missing is the why. Why are we talking about this? Mm-hmm. Why are people advocating and fighting for the right to just live, the right to be who they are in the workplace, to talk about if they are in a same-sex partnership, to talk about something that they did over the weekend with their partner, something as mundane as that, people are having to fight for that ability to speak on that. And so I do believe that a lot of, and I wouldn't say all, but there is a significant amount of this resistance that is based around fear. It is fear of, it may be fear of a marginalized group coming up in the world, right? They're moving up the social ladder. And so in order for that group to move up, for some, they are interpreting it as they're losing out on something. It's like a scale. And in order for this part of the scale to go up, that means that this other part is going down. And that's not necessarily what people are advocating for. They're just advocating for the basic right to live, to love, to be who they are. Yeah. And so there is fear, and fear is a very, very powerful tool to get people to participate in certain conversations or in certain behavior that they may see as a fighting for the purity or the sanctity of their group or their people, when in reality, it's pushing them to limits and to extremes that we have not seen before in world history. I mean, maybe some aspects of world history, but it's like the type of topics and the type of conversations we have certainly not seen the divisiveness here in the United States the way that we are seeing it right now. And it is really hard. I will tell you right now, as I sit here and talk to you, there are a number of my colleagues, my brothers and sisters, and everyone in between that lead this work for nonprofits, for profits, who are just tapping out because it is so hard to get through to people who are really controlled and making life decisions based off of fear, and that fear of losing something or, you know, an idea or identities being impressed upon them that go against their views and their life experiences or just things that they have been taught are right versus wrong.
Yeah. You know, there's a certain amount of irony as well in this, because, you know, something you said really clicked for me was, you know, people don't want the fear of having something placed on them that they don't want, yet their reaction to it is to place their thoughts and, you know, on those that are marginalized, and not necessarily seeing that you're doing the very thing that you don't want happening to you. And so really pointing out those aha moments and clarifying, you know, like, what's important to you? What are your values? But I'm also seeing and hearing this so much. You know, I've talked to employees, I've talked to leaders in organizations, and the piece that seems to be missing is the humanity, right? Like, we have gotten to a place where we see people as things and objects and the opposite of whatever we feel or belief and not see people as humans, right? And people that want to have the same rights as everyone else that is, you know, around them. Okay, so, you know, what I'm also seeing is this, almost this, the best way I can describe it is there's so much happening right now. I mean, we're looking at what's happening at the state level. We're looking at what's happening at the federal level. We're seeing what's happening globally as well. And it's so much information that some people are just frozen, right? Like they're not even sure what to do, what to say. You know, I constantly hear, I want to say something. I don't know what to say. So I'm not going to say anything, which then also sends a message that you don't care, right? Like it's this ever evolving space of discomfort. And, you know, to your point, the folks that are doing this work every single day are burning out and tapping out if they're not going 10 toes down, or they're going 10 toes down and then totally burning out where they're not a help to themselves or anyone else.
Right.
But we have this group of people that care, are overwhelmed because they don't know how to help or how to. The visual that I'm getting is like double dutch, right? Like in that motion of, okay, I want to jump in. Ooh, okay, I can't quite jump in. And then there's this fear of like, ooh, if I get hit by this rope, that's going to hurt. So I'm not going to jump in. Right, it's
right.
This double dutch. What do you say to those people? Because I, you know, as we're talking about communications, as we're talking about where they are and understanding where they are, I think it's important that we figure out our message to them. So what would you say that message is?
So many things. And I do want to go back to a few points that you have made and tying it back to the message that I would share with those folks.
Okay.
So you were discussing earlier about this fear of getting involved, which I think is very much tied to cancel culture. Mm-hmm. So if I say the wrong thing, if I take the wrong side, someone's going to cancel me. And I don't want to get canceled. That's I would right. rather just stay neutral. Hey, I don't have, as some folks say, I don't have a dog in this fight.
Right.
I'm just going to stand back. And I think that's a safe thing to do, I suppose. But what some of those folks are missing out on, or what is not really landing for them, is that you have the ability to not get involved, to stand back. But there are people that are from marginalized communities that do not have that option to not get involved. I mean, you can look at someone and say, that is a Black woman, or there is a disabled man, or there is someone who is neither, right? That is a white man, that is whatever. You're already being categorized before people can even really get to know you. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the marginalized groups, they can't opt out. Some may try to opt out, some may act as though they are not included in the conversation,
which is a whole other conversation.
There's a whole other discussion, right? That is their right. I'm very big on people having the right to do what it is that they'd like. But at the end of the day, I mean, if people didn't know who you were, you would be lumped in with everybody else. So that's the first piece that I wanted to mention. The second piece, and I think it's very timely because of where I am right now. We talked about fear and how people can be driven to move forward and take certain actions based on something that they think is going to happen. And I am currently, as I sit here talking to you, I am in Vienna, Austria. I came over to Europe for work and I made a detour and I'm spending some days and I'm working here. And yesterday I went on a tour to discuss World War II. Mm-hmm. And learning about how an individual rose to power and how he was able to inspire people to commit acts of such horrific violence against other groups of people. And for what? because you have pushed a narrative that people subscribe to. They said, yeah, that sounds about right. Mm-hmm. And oh, these are the atrocities that I have to commit. Okay. And then there were some folks that said, hey, I didn't see anything, or this doesn't involve me, and they didn't get involved. And we have human history, and this is one example, but you have other examples of human history where something was happening, a movement was happening, it was picking up steam, and folks had a decision to make. I either get involved, or in a positive way, like stop what's happening. I get involved in a negative way where they're acts of violence and discrimination that are happening against other groups, or I don't get involved at all. And so to answer your question, what do you say, or how can you get people to be a part of the discussion? I do this in my role at work, but I also do this in my role as a human being and humanizing people. Because again, going back to the World War II example, these folks were not humanized when they were put into concentration camps. If we think about slavery, world slavery, but even within the United States, these folks were not considered human beings. They were property. So when I think about the conversations that I try to have with people, I say, listen, if you truly want to learn, if you truly are here to understand what is it that these folks are talking about, I welcome you to come and be a part of this discussion. Don't come into it thinking that you know it all. Don't come into it planning to talk over someone or say, well, I didn't do that. I didn't participate in the Holocaust. I didn't participate in the Rwandan genocide. I didn't participate in whatever the topic is. Of course you didn't. That's not the point. The point is getting to the root of why certain groups are always at the bottom of that social caste system globally. Right. The purpose of the conversation is to get deeper into the why. Why is this happening? Why does it impact you? Why and how does this impact me? It's just exploring the why instead of going into it saying, oh, nope, that's not real. Sasha, whatever you're saying you're experiencing, it's really a figment of your imagination. No one would treat you like that. Maybe you're just, you're embellishing the story. It probably didn't happen that way, right? Mm-hmm. You're going into it already shutting Sasha down.
Gaslighting, yeah.
Instead of saying, let me actually listen to some of the experiences that have happened over time to then start to really formulate some of my thoughts and be engaged in this deeper conversation.
You know, I love, Shirley, what you are putting forth, because what I'm hearing is asking the question why, right? And I worked at a place where they was like, you know, ask five whys, like why, and just really get to the root of what the issue is, rather than just kind of taking it, oh, okay, whatever. Right. Really understand what the root of it is. Another part of that is education. Right. Learning, understanding, challenging your own biases, challenging what you may have been taught your entire life that, you know, oh, there's a different perspective to this. OK, now that I hear this other perspective, how does that shape how I see the situation? So I think there's a challenge that happens there. But it also ties into understanding, again, the humanity of it all, right? When you don't see people as property or things that are over there, but as someone that is connected to you in community, there's a different level of connection that takes place.
There's a different level of connection. But the other piece that I wanted to mention, and I don't want to forget it, folks that tend not to see the why or understand the why until it happens to them really intrigue me, interest me. I have the question marks that pop all around my head, because for me, and again, just speaking from my own perspective, I don't need to necessarily experience something personally to feel empathy towards someone else. If you told me that you were hit by a car I don't need to be hit by a car as well to say, oh, that was not a great experience. Mm-hmm. I would listen to the pain that you went through. You went to the hospital, you may have gone through surgeries. Like, I'm listening to it. I don't have to experience it. And this is what I find, as I said, interesting, and that I will use that as the word. But I guess I would also say frustrating when people deny the experience that others may have until it happens to them, yeah, or it happens to someone close to them. And then all of a sudden, it's a big deal. And mm-hmm. my thing is, no, it has always been this way. I think that there does need to be a bit more humanity. We are human beings, and we're all on individual journeys. I am not here to profess that I have all of the answers, because I don't, and I am constantly learning. But a part of that learning is also understanding that there are things that my friends, my colleagues, folks from all walks of life that I meet every day will go through that mm-hmm. I have not experienced, but I owe it to them to listen and to take their interpretation of that event as being real to them. And this actually goes both ways, because again, I meet people who subscribe to DEI. I also meet people who don't subscribe to DEI. And those are the folks that I really enjoy talking to, because I want to understand the psychology of their resistance or their lack of understanding to this work. Mm-hmm. And there are experiences that they may go through that I will never, as I said, I will never experience. But to hear them and to say, oh, that's the math that you're doing. Okay, so now I see where you went wrong in this equation. Let's walk it back, mm-hmm. right? And let's reframe some of the thoughts that you may have around a particular topic. That's something that inspires me and pushes me to really keep moving forward with this work.
Yeah, and you know, the tactic that I always use with folks like that is making it personal, right?
Yes.
So, you know, and I've told the story several times about, you know, facilitating a conversation, and then this gentleman was just totally anti-DEI until I talked about being able-bodied and having the privilege of being able-bodied and the things that I don't have to navigate because of that. And it struck a chord because his wife is in a wheelchair.
Right.
And the things that they needed to navigate just for a trip to Disney. Right. And so everything else he was fighting, but when he made the connection to something that was very dear to his heart,
right,
he started to understand. Right. And so that gave me a place to say, okay, now, right, there's certain things that you don't have to think about. Right.
Yes.
You don't have to navigate that others yes. do. Right. And so that, I think, is the beauty of this work, is because DEI tip is for the marginalized, not just racially. Right. There's so many other aspects of it that people forget about, that you can easily tap into one of those areas and be able to draw folks in.
I think another great example in popular culture is the movie A Time to Kill, Samuel L. Jackson, Matthew McConaughey.
Ooh, yeah.
And the crux of the story is Matthew McConaughey giving his closing arguments. He feels that he's going to lose this case. And he said one sentence that completely changed the game. And he said, now imagine if this little girl were white. And that was it. It's using something that was grounding the jury in that movie. But to your point, this individual that's resistant, it's grounding him in the fact that being able-bodied is a privilege, and we take it for granted. And that word privilege is very, very triggering for some people. There are negative connotations with it. And it's like, no, we have certain privileges. I mean, based on who you are as an individual, there are certain privileges that you have in this world. It's acknowledging that. And so I love the example that you gave. But as you were talking, I thought about A Time to Kill. And I remember him saying the line. And that is what freed Carl Lee, right? Like, that was the gene,
yeah.
Free Carl Lee. And that is what freed him.
Yeah. And I mean, we could talk about privilege for days. But, you know, the more and more I think about just reframing the work of diversity, equity, and inclusion moving forward, because there are going to be more and more states that are going after it. There are going to be more and more pieces of legislation that are going to go after it. And, you know, as you were talking about World War II, you know, I recently went to the Holocaust Museum, and one of the last quotes that you see, and I'm going to butcher this, but, you know, really is about they went after, you know, this particular group and I did nothing. They went after this particular group and I did nothing, right? And then they came after me and there was no one there to speak up for me. And I see that happening so much. But it also for me ties to this fight against history, right? And necessarily not knowing your history or knowing the true history, which leads to indoctrination, right? So if we're not going to tell you the true story, we're going to indoctrinate you into believe this is what's happening. And I hate to say, but that's part of the playbook, right? That individual used in World War II, mm-hmm. which again, knowing history, which was actually using the playbook of the United States in the 1940s and 50s. Mm-hmm. And so as we're doing this work, I really think that it's important to tie people to the points that are going to resonate with them, even if they are on that anti-DEI side of things, but then also understanding the historical context, right? I tell folks, DEI just didn't start. Like, this has been the work from, you know, the civil rights movement and beyond. It's just been named a different thing, right? So again, right. Knowing and understanding the history of this work and those that have opposed this work, right? Moving even during those times. During that time, Martin Luther King was one of the most hated people in the United States. Now, all of a sudden, he's being quoted by the very folks that are working against, you know, what he was standing for. So I think there's these opportunities now for us to really shift this narrative and really bring in those folks that might be on the margins, not quite sure what to do, helping them determine, like, what is that first step that you can take that may be safe, right? But safe in a way that is actually going to help move the needle. So I know I just said a whole lot, but I want to ask you one more question before we go. I feel like it's you're constantly putting out fires and constantly trying to figure out, you know, how to please everyone. What are the things that you do to take care of yourself? Like, how do you fill your cup?
Well, I love to read. I'm glad that you asked this question because it is crucial for anyone that's doing this work, because it's easy to get burnt out. And as I mentioned before, I have a few folks in my life that I'm close with who have had funding cut and their jobs have been cut, or they've just said, this is too much and I am tired. And you can hear it in their voice that they are tired. Yeah. So what I like to do is I love to read. I've always been a reader. I actually have a book next to me right here, which is very fitting for this conversation, but it's talking about caste systems globally and how caste impacts the way that we treat people, because there's always someone at the top and there's always someone at the bottom. And those folks at the bottom are put into these categories, they're vilified, all of these negative attributes are attached to them. And I mean, they don't want to be there at the bottom, right? Mm-hmm. But someone has to be there, and it's very hard to break out of that. So I love reading. I love traveling. So as I mentioned, I'm in Vienna, Austria. But I love, as an introvert, which I'm surprised every time that I say this because I know that.
Me too.
But I love learning about new cultures. Mm-hmm. I love learning about new ways that people live and think. And I like to collect items from my various travels as well that represent the culture that I was just in. I do like to get outside and just breathe air. You know, you're at a computer all day working remotely. And so going outside has been big. Working out has been big. One thing that I started this year is meditation. So I have my Calm app, and there's one woman on there, Tamara Levitt. And so every day I put her in, and there's a topic, or if I'm feeling some type of way about something specifically in my life, I will go to that topic and I'll just meditate and breathe and calm myself. But it's important to do this stuff. Expressing gratitude has been so big for me. And there are moments, and I know this is a recorded podcast, so normally I would say, I wouldn't tell this to everyone, but I will say it here. There are so many moments in my life where I look up and I say, this is your life. Like, look at all of the blessings that are around you. Your parents are alive. Your siblings are healthy. You have a great job. You work with great people. You're supported. You're loved. You have the ability to have choices. And the life that you are living is the dream of my grandparents, of my ancestors that had no choices. And I get to live that right now in 2024. And that is what grounds me in gratitude. Even during those moments when I'm having some tough days, it's like, you know, I know that today is hard. But again, you think about other people that were before you, and they would, and even people today, and they would gladly take on the issues that you have. So that's how I do, that's how I do self-care. I love listening to music too. Don't even get me started on concerts and my and the spectrum. So we'll have to talk about that. But it's just an appreciation for life. And I am grateful, even during some of these hard moments where I'm seeing these conversations crack off. And I just look and say, what are they thinking? How did they come to that conclusion? Why are they positioning this topic in this way? It's easy to get frustrated with that, but I just reel it back in and say, Shirley, you can only do one thing at a time, and you can only make an impact if you are great up here and great in here. So that's what I do with well-being.
I love it. I love it. I do nightly meditations too. So I,
good. Yes. We need it. We need it.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So Shirley, if folks wanted to get in contact with you, what is the best way for them to do that?
They can find me on LinkedIn. I do try to post inspirational things on LinkedIn. It's not all business. Even though this is a business platform, I think it's important to also post things about well-being, because we all need that, no matter what it is that we're doing for a living. So you can find me on LinkedIn. Also, my company, Progress, has a inclusion and diversity page. And so you can see all of the great work that a team of people, and I say this all the time, it is not the Shirley Show. There are a team of volunteers globally that lead our employee resource groups, that lead our IND committee, our CEO staff members, their direct reports, and everyone in between are really committed to this work. And they're also committed to learning, because none of us have all of the answers. And there are new things that we are constantly trying to learn about and form connections with. And so you can learn more about some of our work on that page. And even on our Progress social media sites, we do publish a lot of some of the activities that these groups are spearheading. So it's not me. It's not just me. I would be
the team.
It would be wrong of me to position it as just me. There are people from all walks of life that have supported this work, and I am so grateful for them.
All right. Well, Shirley, I appreciate the work that you and your team does. Because we need that, right? We absolutely need that. And we need that collective support and unity. So thank you so much for that work that you do. And thank you for joining us today, because we need to hear some of these conversations, and just how we can reposition, because I know people that are listening reposition the conversation, right? Get to people in places that connect to the humanness of who they are, as we try to encourage them to walk the path on the right side of history. And I would just leave it at that. So Shirley, thank you so much. And thank you for tuning in to this week's episode. You know, you can catch us here every Tuesday at 5:15 p.m. Eastern, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Be sure to like, share, subscribe, tell all of your friends, tell all of your colleagues about DEI After Five. And until next time, have a good one.